Okay, we are in the middle of the story of David and Goliath. I did want to share with you, though. I'm very excited about this. I've been flipping through this book, Future Tense. Anyone read this by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks? Jews, Judaism, and Israel in the 21st Century. Highly recommended. Okay. What? Too many. Okay. Nah, halavai that I was reading into the night. Okay, it's, future tense. Okay. No, you don't need. Come on, you don't need a dictionary. Okay. Let me. But because he gives some analysis of Sefer Shmuel, and that's why I'm bringing this in. I mean, it's really a brilliant book where he talks about the role of the Jewish people today, the role of Israel. He goes through Jewish history, how the Holocaust plays in, etc. And he has a book here called one chapter called The New Zionism, okay? Where he says the following. He says that Israel thus far has succeeded at building a state. Okay, we've built this unbelievable state. But where Israel has not fully succeeded yet, or still has their work, we still have our work cut out for us, is to build a civil society. Okay, and it distinguishes between a state, the government structures and institutions and judges and an army and prime minister. That's all a state, the structures of a state. But then you have something called civil society. Civil society is a society based on good values, where people in different sectors of society get along. There's a shared vision, and and to some degree, he speaks about how it's interesting that for 2,000 years in exile, we didn't have a state, but we had a society. We had built a social covenant amongst Jews. Okay, we'd been able to build a very healthy, functional society within our own Jewish communities. And now that we have a state, but we haven't succeeded at building a society yet. A civil society in which, people are able to see other people's perspectives, in which there's a shared vision for the future. And then he goes on a little bit of a tangent to speak about how Israel we're the people who created the idea of a narrative, and Israel is the country without a narrative. What does that mean? Is that, we're the ones who have the first great story in history, being taken out of Egypt and building our own nation, etc. So we're the people who created the idea of a story, of a national narrative. And yet when it comes to Israel today, we as religious Zionists, we have a narrative. That Beit HaMikdash was destroyed 2,000 years ago. We were exiled. And we have fought, and we have finally made it back to Israel 2,000 years later. We have to appreciate what we have, right? But if you ask a secular Israeli, I don't love that term, secular Israeli, what are we doing here? They'll say, actually, the creation of Israel is a disruption from the past. We're here because everything else failed. We're here just as so we don't want to be killed. That was the original, one of the original, that was Herzlian Zionism was, they want to kill us. We have to create our own country so that we're not going to be killed. So, so there's no long-term narrative that connects to biblical times. It's very actually just, destruction and saving oneself from death. So how does this relate to Sefer Shmuel? Because in Sefer Shmuel, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks argues, and it's based on an interpretation by Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes, who was a big thinker in the 19th century. He says, what happened in Perek Chet when the Jewish people ask for a king? Okay? And why is God so reluctant to give them a king? He said, because Judaism doesn't really care so much about the state, the structures of a state. It's not as important. Oh, you have a king, you have this, you have a show of faith, you have a judge, you can even have a democracy, as we saw according to Abravanel. That's not the key point. The key point is what's the quality of the society that's built by the people themselves. Okay, what could a king do? A king could help you fight a war. A king could instill fear in people so that they don't violate the law. But you want a king to have to get people to not violate the law? What type of society are you creating, right? What's going to be a more functional community? A community where whenever something goes wrong, the police swoop in and get rid of the offender? Or where the people themselves value, we want to build a community where people respect each other, people don't break into each other's homes, people are do chesed, right? There are these two totally different models. Judaism's model is the latter one. create a healthy society, and you don't need a dominant king to prevent people, you know, to prevent nations from killing us and to prevent people from doing bad things.
But you know, in exchange with that,
yeah,
basically, it's written that if we don't behave ourselves, the land will lack people.
Correct. Nachon.
Nachon. We don't have any claim to this country unless we behave.
Nachon. Correct. Correct. And that's why he says. That's why, you know, and he actually compares it to a book. Anyone read Thomas Hobbes' The Leviathan? No? The Leviathan is a book, Leviathan, by the way. So 16th, 17th century British thinkers, many of them, when the idea of a republic, the idea of democracy, new forms of government were coming into being, many of them used biblical ideas, okay, Leviathan. And Thomas Hobbes argues that, you know, how do you have the philosopher of politics? What is a government? What does it mean that you appoint a leader of sorts? And it means essentially that everyone gives up some of their freedom, in order, you give up your freedom in order that one person can have more power, and with more power they can then protect everybody. Okay, and that's it's out of fear, out of danger. And so that's essentially what the Jewish people are doing in Sefer Shoftim. That's what Shmuel is telling them. You're going to appoint a king. You're going to lose your freedom. The king will protect you in certain areas, but it's not going to help you build a civil society. This is not really going to further our ultimate goal. It might protect you, but that's not the ultimate goal. And so what he says here, at the end of the chapter, we can now understand a phenomenon that would otherwise be wholly unintelligible. How Jews survived in exile for 2,000 years. They did so because they were society before they were a state. They had laws before they had a land. They had a social covenant before they had a social contract. Contract is about, you know, you do this and I'll do that. A covenant is about a relationship that you build with people in a community. So even if the contract failed, the covenant remained. Even if they lost their state, they were still bound together as a covenanted nation. Even if they lost the land, they still had the laws. No other nation has had this dual political structure. No other nation could survive the loss of its land. Though the survival of Jews as a people has seemed to many, among them Augustine, Pascal, Rousseau, to be a miracle, it has a structural explanation. It lay in the unique feature of biblical politics, the priority of covenant over contract, society over state. Okay? So this is what's happening in Sefer Shmuel, where, you know, he's basically teaching the people, you want a king. A king is just an external mechanism of government. It's not going to help you really create a proper society. And so this, you know, yeah. And this is, so it is important that even in Israel, we recognize we have a state, et cetera, but it's insufficient. We still need to do a lot more in terms of how society relates to each other, how people relate to each other. So I thought this was an interesting piece. Definitely recommend the book.
No,
2010 maybe, I don't know. 2009. Yeah, 2009. Do you guys read Rabbi Jonathan Sacks at all? Yes? No. Okay, so you, which one? Tidbits. Yeah, it's Torah Tidbits, but this is a longer book. So worth taking a look. Oh, he's saying this is hard work. This is saying that's why we haven't gotten there yet.
It's hard work, but it's never existed.
I mean, no, I'm not saying perfect. No, he's saying what we had in many ways in Galut for the last 2,000 years was better what we have in Israel today in terms of the society, in terms of the civil society. You know, he's not saying they were perfect. I don't know if he's saying they were perfect.
It's not easier to be together when everyone else is against you. So you're living in a world where you,
his point to some degree is, his point is if we didn't have external enemies today, he's not sure Israel would make it. We would potentially rip each other apart. I agreed, and that's his point. That's the exact point he's making. He's like, could we get along without enemies on every single border? And that's what he's saying. We need to learn how to do that. That's exactly what he's saying. I mean, I think he'd want more people to read it, but what are you going to do, you know?
Our leaders have fallen from grace, a lot of our leaders.
Nachon.
Correct.
Nachon, correct. Listen, I was trying to get my license renewed yesterday. I knew to get an Israeli license. I mean, I couldn't believe the amount of screaming that was going on in this room. You know, and I mean, just ridiculous. There's a guard standing in front of the people because people are yelling at them all day because they can't get their act together. And it was so dysfunctional. It was the last thing I needed to do for Aliyah. And I kept saying, like, this is it. I'm going to be done. Check this off the list. And I almost knew going, you know, you have this feeling when you go somewhere like, it's not happening today. I had all my documents. I waited patiently for everything. I sat there for 3 hours and they did everything they could to not help me. What?
One pushed in front of you.
What? No. I didn't get it. I spent all day on this yesterday. I mean, it was... Yeah, no, agreed. But these are the things, you know, it's where we like are we living in a third world country or a first world country? So that's where sometimes that's what I think he's getting at a little bit. Yeah.
I'll say very quickly, Richard.
Yeah.
I don't want to take up too much time, but it's my best story.
Yeah.
When I started high school, we had a very scary head teacher. We were called in, if you were like 11 years. 'Cause I taught men and like I got while I was away, and it stayed with me because I didn't get why she told us we were guests until when I finished university. I went to Czechoslovakia and Austria. My brother was about to start the army here in Israel, and my grandfather took us back to where he had come from and how he escaped through Europe. And we spent a Shabbat in Prague in this synagogue called the Altnoise. My brother and my grandfather went into the men's bit, and the women's bit, it's like this kind of mushroom-shaped building, and the women's bit, there are like these little slats. There was every type of Jew you can imagine in this Friday night synagogue. There were these like huge bubbas from Brooklyn with these enormous baubles on their fingers, and then there were like these kibbutzy-type women, and then there were women in kippot and tallit, and there were like random travelers. There was every type of Jew you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And I stood there feeling a little bit afraid because I thought, how is this going to work? How is actually the service going to take place where no one's going to know the same tunes, and the women are going to want to lead, and the American women are only going to know Ashkenazi, and the Israeli traveler, blah, blah, blah. And I really felt like the anxiety of all these different people, and it was the most unbelievable service I've ever been to. Everyone sang together, and it struck me, every single person in that shul was a guest. That's what she meant. If we all approached our lives in Israel, in the world in general, as guests, you always behave better. Like, I always say to my kids, I can't behave in my house like you behave in everyone else's house. You always behave better in someone else's house.
Because
you're conditioned to feel like you're not entitled. You're entitled to be like arrogant and take things and behave in a way.
It's a good lesson.
Very important life lesson. And by the way, Chabad led the service, so make that what you want.
Oh, interesting.
But there was no leader.
There was a leader, but no one felt like they could...
But that also speaks to the fact that you were in Prague outside of Israel, speaks to the fact that almost like the sense of Israeli of Jewish society that existed then that can still exist, and you know, imagine if we were able to recreate that type of moment here in Israel, like that's the, and that's the point. That's, and you see the tension when we're not trying to build a state, it's much easier, right? But because we're building a state and there are a limited amount of resources, and these are some of the challenges that we have. And that's the, can we build that type of atmosphere here in Israel while building a state at the same time?
His comment was that he, of course, spoke about the machloket le shemayim ve machloket shelo. Ve hu amar the machloket l'shamayim, of course, is to find the truth. You discuss and you find the truth. That which is not l'shamayim is for power.
Ah.
And every machloket, especially between the zramim in Israel, is not to find the truth. It's power.
I mean, some. It depends who you're dealing with, but not nachon. Nachon. There's a lot of nachon. Nachon. Correct. And that is a real challenge. That's why this is a big challenge living here. Okay. So let's now go back to Perek. We're in the middle of Perek Yud Zayin. Okay. And we left 2 weeks ago. If you remember, I was sick this last week. 2 weeks ago, with a bit of a cliffhanger, David is about to encounter Goliath. Okay, so just a quick summary of what happened in the story so far. The beginning of the parak starts with a description of what? Of Goliath's? His armor. Okay, like five or six psukim, and he was wearing all this bronze, and his spear, and his javelin, and his sword, and his shield, and his shield bearer. It's not mocking him, but it's almost like you feel like it's exaggerating in order to build up the sense of you have the underdog and the expected victor, and that's of course Goliath is clearly going to win and destroy anyone who comes his way, and we spoke about Shaul. Shaul, what does Shaul do as a result of Goliath? Goliath goes to the Jewish camp every day, and he taunts them, and he says, whoever wants to fight me, let's just have a duel between us, okay? And then we don't need to actually fight a war. And everyone's scared of him. David ends up coming to the camp. Why does David come to the camp? To bring food to his brothers. And his brothers say, get out of here, okay? And we contrasted David and how he responds to his brothers versus Yosef and his brothers. What's the primary difference between them? Primary difference is that David, Yosef, he was an instigator. He caused trouble. Okay? He shouldn't have been thrown in a pit. You don't sell your brother, even if he annoys you, even if sometimes you want to, but you don't do that, right? So, whereas David didn't. Yeah. David didn't instigate with his brothers. He was actually more sort of respectful, and it was they were the ones who were starting with him. Now, what is Shaul's response to Goliath? What does he say? He's nowhere to be found. He's nowhere to be found. No comments on his Twitter. Nothing. Okay, you can. He's hiding. He's sort of hiding. But he puts out a prize. Says whoever kills Goliath, won't have to pay any taxes. Okay, which is a lot of money in Israel, right? Won't have to pay any taxes, and he's going to be able to marry the king's daughter. Okay, and we see first of all how afraid Shaul is, and we also see that Shaul was the one who should have gone out. He's the number one warrior of the Jewish people, right? And he is shirking his responsibility. So,
I wasn't here.
Yeah. Could ask the same question in the Israeli army. Why are Ktsinim, why do they go in the front? Why is the Mifaked in the front? Why are the generals in the front lines as opposed to...
It's not the
Ramatkal, but pretty close to it.
Not the Minister of Defense either.
Right.
It's
okay, it's a fair point. It's a fair...
Just a little bit...
Yeah, I hear it. Okay.
Have been there.
I hear it. It's a fair point. It's a fair point. Nachon, you don't put your king on the front line. Although sometimes when the king does go first, it can rally the troops, right?
But if you look at a one-on-one battle here,
correct.
In a losing situation, where Shaul knows that he's not
correct. Nachon. 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 And David, what's David's response to this? David says in Pasuk Kav Zayin, we're in 17:27. Okay, Yud Zayin Kav Zayin. Vayomer lo Am Kadavar Zele Mor Koya Asalisha Shoyakenu. What does David say? What pasuk did I have down here that I wanted to look up? No, what David sort of responds. Pasuk Kavav 26. ויאמר דוד לאנשים עמדים ממלא אמר, מה יעשה לאיש אשר יקל פלישתי הלז ויסחר פל מישהו? כי מי הפלישתי הרי לזה כי חרף מערכות אלוהים חיים? What's going to happen? He's sort of questioning. Wait, there's going to be a reward for someone who kills this plishti, who's scorning and ridiculing HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish fighters? It's like, you need a reward for this, to fight against this? Right? Seriously? A person should want to fight for the right reasons. Out of principle, you don't need some reward for this. And we spoke about it a little bit last time about, you know, we educate our children to do things for rewards. Even then, you want to stay away from that. Don't eat dinner so that you'll get dessert. Eat dinner. Because dinner's a good thing to eat. It's going to make you feel good, okay? It's healthy. You have to eat dinner. So David seems to question the approach of Shaul here. But then, there's still no one to fight Goliath. So what happens? Shaul hears about David's talk in the camp, and he says, okay, bring him to me. So David goes to Shaul HaMelech. And what happens? What does he say in Pasuk Lamed Gimel 33? What does he say in Lamed Gimel? You're going to go fight? What does he say? Kinarata. You're a little boy. You're a youth. Okay, v'hu ish milchama minurav. He's a warrior from his youth. I mean, what chance do you think you're going to have, David? And what does David say? What does David tell him? What are his credentials? What's his resume? What's on his resume?
Fighting shepherd.
Yeah, I fought against a lion and a bear. I saved my flock. Why is the concept of a flock here relevant? Yeah, leader of a flock. The Jewish king is a leader. And he sort of pointed criticism to Shaul. You should be looking out for your flock more. I look out for my flock. Okay? So, and we spoke about how a shepherd is the... You want to become king? You don't go to Sayeret Matkal necessarily. To become prime minister or, you know, Ramatkal, you become a shepherd. Okay? The Jewish way, yeah, turn it down. Yeah, there we go. The Jewish way is to become a shepherd. That is the way to learn how to lead people. You first learn how to lead animals and take care of them and take care of every single one of them. Okay, so Shaul finally resigns and he says, fine, David, you want to go? You can go. What? You know, I'm not going to convince you otherwise. So what does he give him? This is Pasuk Lamed Zayin. What does he give him? 37. He gives him his armor. And I spoke a little bit about this. The armor, the Met, Metropolitan Museum of Art, they have a whole armor thing. And the armor of the Middle Ages, it was very heavy. I don't know how they when the Crusaders came here filled with armor, I don't know what they did with themselves. I mean, it was boiling. Can you imagine being in Ranana with 70, 80 pounds of armor on you? Like, yeah, in the middle. What, say again?
They had big horses in those days.
Yeah, it's still...
They were short, you know, the ones you see them on the television, you see these beautiful horses, but they're not those. They were like
cart horses.
Cart horses, yeah.
Uh-huh. The Crusaders didn't last.
The Crusaders didn't last. Said lots of them, that's how they worked. There's always more replacements.
It was just... anyway, this is the Middle Ages, right? People weren't... This is the Dark Ages. Sorry, this is the Dark Ages. So, okay, so he gives him his armor, and what does David say?
I don't need it.
It doesn't fit so well. I can't walk. So David takes it off. Okay, he prefers this sense of being natural. And what does he do? So now we'll start with pasuk mem. Vayikach maklo. He takes his makel biado vayivchar lo chamisha chalukei avanim. So he takes his makel. In this case, is his stick, but it's, you know, probably referring to his sling. That's right. Okay, his sling. He takes five perfectly cut or shaped stones from the river. He puts it into his shepherd's pouch, where all his snacks were. And he has the sling in his hand. What do you have there for Yalkut? Anyone have an English translation here? What's Yalkut?
School bag.
It's bag? Knapsack? Okay. Vayigash el haplishti. He starts heading towards the plishti. Vayelach haplishti holech v'karev al David v'yishno se hatzina lefanav. So we're going to have four psukim which describe Goliath and what he does here. So the plishti, he starts coming close. He approaches David, and he has an oseitzi nalevanav. He even has a shield bearer. Vayabet hablishti vayir'ed David. He looks down. Vayabet often means to look down. He stares at David. Vayivzehu. And he scorns him. Ki anar v'admonim yifei mareh. Because there is this youth with red hair, very sweet looking. You know, he was cute. You know, I don't know. He was handsome, and is this a joke? So his confidence is building. Vayomer aplishtil David hakelav anochi. He doesn't look like a warrior. He looks like a sweet little boy. You know, I think that's the idea.
Maybe it takes him off guard also.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. So, tell David, Hakelav Anochi, maybe warriors, you know, in general had, you know, think of the people who, what's that? Rugby. Look at rugby people. Their ears are deformed, and their nose, yeah, their teeth are all out. I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. And David,
no,
you know,
it makes sense though. There wasn't like cosmetics and creams and lotions. Like if you got battered, you stayed battered.
Yeah, nachon, correct,
you
correct.
Unharmed.
Nachon. Vayomer aplishti el David, hakelav anochi gatabai lai v'maklot. Am I a dog? They're coming after me with a stick. And he curses David by his God. Okay? So his confidence is building. Now, this is all, I mean, there are so many examples of this, of presenting Goliath as the, you know, expected winner, and then presenting David as the underdog. You know, and this is just another example of it, especially the armor, the fact that he's not wearing armor. I mean, there is a clear foil being, you know, being presented here. Come, and I'll give your flesh to the birds and to the animals. Okay? So he's building up his confidence. And now David talks. David. You come to me with a sword. And a spear and a javelin of sorts, or you know, these are fighting, you know, devices. I'm coming in the name of the living God, whom you have just ridiculed and scorned. Okay, on this day, God is going to put you in my hand, meaning I'm going to destroy you. V'ikiticha, and He will kill you. V'hasiroti et roshcha me'alecha, I'm going to remove your head. V'natati pegar machane plishtim ayom zelov hashemayim ulechayat asedeh, I'm going to leave your carcass, the carcass of the plishti camp, to the birds of the heaven and the animals of the field. Ve'du kol aretz ki yesh Elohim l'Yisrael, and the whole land will know that there is a God in Israel. Wow, that is a pretty serious talk, okay? It's like, anyone know football? Joe Namath, okay, predicted he was going to win the Super Bowl before the game. You know, you got to be careful when you do those things, right? But David, wow, whew, his emunah is strong. The force is with him, okay? He is absolute confidence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to save him. Now, who is he speaking to? He's speaking to the plishtim. He's speaking to Goliath, of course, but I think there's also, he is showing an example for Shaul and the Jews, because Shaul kept looking at this through, you know, I'll give you my daughter and you'll get no taxes and you need armor. He sees this through, it's about military prowess and military ability, whereas for David, it's about emunah. Okay, it's about emunah. No, I mean, how far do you take this, the sense of emuna, right? Maybe we should sit in yeshiva and not go to war at all. But no, David is fighting. He just, when he fights, he has emuna, that ultimately the war is in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hands. Okay, so this is David HaMelech. He's the great warrior of the Jewish people. And he stands up to Goliath. And obviously, David also saying this, when the other Jewish fighters see him doing this, then maybe they'll have some more confidence too. That's what leadership is about. In Pasuk Mem Zayin, V'yedu kol ha-kahal hazeh, right? And everyone here will know, ki lo b'cher v'v'chanit yoshi Hashem, God doesn't save with devices, with military instruments. Ki la-Hashem ha-milchama v'natan etchem b'yadeinu, God doesn't need these things. God is the fighter. Okay. V'natan etchem b'yadeinu. Okay. Hashem ish milchama, Hashem shemo. We say this in Az Yashir. Okay. So, the taunting is done. The speeches have been given. And now it is time for the actual fight. So, Pasuk Mem Chet. V'haya ki kama plishti. V'yelech v'yikrav nikrad David. So the encounter, the duel is about to start. Vayimaher David vayara tamara chalikrat the plishti. David runs towards the plishti. Okay, he runs right at him. Vayishlach David et yado el hakeli, and David takes, you know, puts his hand into his pouch. Vayikach misham even. You can imagine he did this very fast. This is all with speed, absolute speed. And he hits the plishti right in the forehead. Okay, I guess this was in between his helmet and or below his helmet, so he managed to hit him. It sank into his forehead. Okay, that's how powerful this shot was. Vayipol al panav arza, and he falls flat on his face. Okay, he falls flat on his face. What? Yeah, that's interesting. He seemed to have fallen forwards. He's running forwards.
I've seen it also described because he was up on a hill, so if he was knocked, the gravity actually took
him. Oh, interesting. Okay, definitely possible.
He was below him and he hit him and he was coming forwards on a hill and he came.
Definitely possible. Okay.
So, when people complain, I mean, if people don't understand, and people, especially foreign governments, when they complain about, you know, how our reaction to what's happening, overreaction and etc., you can kill with a stone. You know, they're only throwing stones, right? But they use these slings.
Correct.
And you can really kill people with them.
Nahon, correct. Correct.
It's alarming that it is a reversal of the usual situation. Here we are with the armor and the planes and the power.
Ah.
And here they are with the slings.
Ah, okay, we're getting there.
It's
we're getting
awful.
There to who is David and who is Goliath today.
They got us, as they say in South Africa, in a suitcase, verpakt. We don't know what to do.
Okay, we're gonna get there. We are gonna get there. Who is David and who is Goliath today? 2018. This is a very important discussion, which we need to have. Now, did David break the rules here a little bit, by the way? Is there? I don't know. Was this fair game what he did?
Break the rules?
But that he had a sling as opposed to frontal battle. I'm just throwing it out. I don't know. It's an interesting...
It was face to face.
It was face to face. Okay.
Didn't do it when he turned
okay, I hear it.
If he'd have said to Goliath, I'll get you with a sling, Goliath would have said, like, go ahead, do your best. He wouldn't have been scared of a... I mean, he wasn't coming with a... a tank and a...
He's coming
with lesser weapons
as opposed to. Okay, nachon. He's coming with less. He didn't barge the field with a tank.
But you do get the feeling from the way it's written that like he wasn't quite ready, Goliath. The way like you know, it was like they said, okay, on your marks, get set.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm not saying it's wrong, but you do get that feeling. He was like canny. He seized the moment and took him down. Like you do get that feeling from it. I don't think it's wrong, obviously.
The element, so here we have the element surprise. This is David is the first Mossad agent, right? You know, and Nachon. So, Vayarez David. Sorry, Vayachazak David mina plishti bakela. And Pasuk 50, Nun. So, Vayachazak David mina plishti bakela uva evan, Vayachata plishti vayimitehu. So David overpowered him with his sling. And then he hits the plishti and he kills him. V'cherev ein biad David. So, it's not clear how he's killing him now. Or at least, I guess he was dead. Oh, no, sorry. This seems to be a summary of what just happened. That David killed him without a sword in his hand. So what David said came true. I don't need a cherev or a chanit. I don't need these things. Just because, you know, if you have God on your side, you don't need these things. Vayarotz David, vayamor el plishti, vayikachet. Now, what does David now do? He runs to the, he comes closer to the plishti. He takes his sword, vayishlefa mitara, he pulls it from its sheath, vayimotetehu. I guess he kills him a second time. It sounds like he'd killed him before. But now at least he cuts off his head. Okay, we can agree this is a final death. Okay, so he cuts off his head. Vayiru'a plishtim kimeit gibura. Now the plishtim see their hero has been killed, vayanusu, and they run away. Vayakumu anshei Yisrael v'Yudah. Now the Jewish people, Yisrael v'Yudah, by the way, notice again, they're separate. Separate groups. Anshei Yisrael v'Yudah, even before the kingdom splits, following Shlomo HaMelech, there were still differences between these two kingdoms, or these two parts of the Jewish people. Vayariu, they have a war cry. Vayirdefu at haplishtim ad boach hagai v'ad sharei Ekron. They run after the plishtim. Vayiplu chalei plishtim v'derech shareim v'ad gat v'ad Ekron. And the plishtim are dying all over from all these different locations. Vayashuva b'nei Yisrael midlok acharei plishtim. The Jews finish chasing after the plishtim. Vayashosu at machaneim. They loot their camps. Vayikach David at rosh haplishti v'yiviehu Yerushalayim. David brings the head of the plishti to Yerushalayim. Okay? Vetkelav sam be'ohalo, and his kelim, his weapon, he brings to his tent. Now, there's a problem here historically. Yerushalayim was not a Jewish city at this point. Yerushalayim was ruled by, anyone know who ruled Yerushalayim? The Yevusim, the Jebusites. Okay? David is going to be the one who conquers Yerushalayim later on. He hasn't done that yet. So this may be something that was added in later, and really he brought it actually to, we'll see where he does bring, Goliath's sword is going to, sort of have a second life, okay, as we'll see. And it's going to be in a place called Nov. Okay, Nov. No, the whole plishti camp, he said, will be food to the birds and to the field. That's what he suggested. Okay.
But his tent could have been in Jerusalem. It didn't mean to say that it was the capital. Where they were fighting is not that far from Jerusalem.
It's not that far, but why would you bring something to Jerusalem when he doesn't have control of it yet? When the Jews aren't there yet, right? So that's the.
There's not even anything special about Jerusalem yet.
But it doesn't
discover
it
yet. No, nachon. I mean, yeah, they haven't. Nachon. What?
As I said, it doesn't matter that it wasn't the capital. It's just geographically that's where.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I hear it. I hear it. But commentators point out that there's a problem here. Now, pasuk nunhei v'chirot Shaul et David yotze dikrat haplishti amar el Avner sar tzava. And when Shaul sees David coming back from the war front, he says to Avner, who's his general, Ben Miza Hanara Avner, who's this guy? Who is he the son of? Vayomer Avner Chayin Avshecha Melech, Imedati, he says, I wish I knew. Vayomer Melech Sha'alata Ben Miza He'alem. And the Melech says, go ask him, who is this guy? Yafid. Of course Shaul knows who he is. Uchashuv David me'akodet ha'plishti, v'yikach oto Avner. So when David returns, Avner takes him v'yivyeh livnei Shaul, v'rosh ha'plishti b'yado. He's still walking around with Goliath's head. Okay? Like my son, he walks around with his tractors and his little toys, and my brother used to walk around with tools when he was a little kid. Yeah, hammer. He loved this stuff. Okay, David's walking around with Goliath's head. Okay, fine. Okay. Maybe they, you know, when they, what do they do when they...
It was in a bag.
Maybe it was in a bag. Put it into a victory bag. Maybe it was in a bag. Maybe they, I hope they drained it. I mean, maybe they, what's the thing when they take animals and they... they stuff them, tax them. I imagine they taxed his, you know, whatever, and stuffed his head as well. So so he's still walking around with his head. These are not things that we do. Well, we don't do this. There are some people who do these things still in the world. Yeah. Now, we live in a...
How else would anybody know what he had done?
What? Yeah, I mean, there is. I'm going to tell you. It's not. It's a gruesome story. But my cousin, he was in San Chanim in the '90s, '80s. I mean, they were, you know, they were in. He was in Chevron or Beit Lechem, and they had to respond to a some Palestinian cut off his sister's head because she had cheated, because she had you know, lost her. Kavod HaMishpacha, family honor. You know, so this is... I don't know, yeah. It's still happening. Is that really the truth?
Honor killing still happens.
Honor killing, I don't know.
They're still reported and it's still happening.
It might not be that they're carrying a head around, but...
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Often with fire.
Yeah.
Excuse
me. We live in a crazy world, right? So,
but I think doing it nowadays and doing it then has like different...
Yeah, connotations, nachon, correct. Correct, agreed.
I mean, it's still quite gross.
Well, that's the point, that some of us are in 2018 and some of us are in still in the dark ages, right? And yet those who are living in the dark ages are judged according to, you know, they're not, no one, you know, get judged in the same standards that we do, which is totally asymmetrical, doesn't make sense. So this is the end of this story, okay? There's a problem here about how does Shaul not know who David is? Three Parshanim address this. Rav Yosef Kara says he really doesn't have an explanation for it. The Ralbag says, listen, a king sees many people. The king, many people come before the king. And so this is a challenge here. If I'm known to Bazak, is a whole different explanation of this, which I don't want to get into right now because it's complicated. But Ralbag says, you know, the king doesn't always recognize, you know, who he met. Rashi says he wasn't asking who David was. He's like, what's his genealogy? As it says, Ben Miza Hanar, like who, you know, who's his family? What's this guy's lineage? So it's a problematic source.
Maybe he's asking because he's thinking he's about to marry his daughter, so he wants.
Oh yeah, who's my future father-in-law? Right, you know. David never said he wanted to, although we'll see. He will.
But it also might be something. I mean,
yeah.
The king lives surrounded by people. He might not even notice the face of the.
Well, but what he did. But he did meet with David. So I'll tell you, Rav Amnon Bazak believes that there are sort of two different narratives that are happening parallel to each other from Perek Chet still to this point. And each of them capture different aspects of. One aspect is, one dimension is really against the idea of having a monarchy. Okay. And one is accepting of the monarchy. And there are two different tracks. And he splits up the different prakim according to these two different, you know, perspectives of pro or against the monarchy. And we've seen conflicted reports about it. That's how he does it. It's a little complicated. So it's a question. It's a question about what happened here. No worries. Okay, so now we get to the fundamental question. Okay. Who is, and I just want to bring to your attention, who is David and who is Goliath today? These are, you know, very often we still use imagery or personalities from Tanakh to discuss our own situation. Who is David and who is Goliath today?
Lord Bullitt.
What do you think?
It's very, it shouts at you. I don't like it, but it shouts at me that here is mamash, a typical David without faith in our Hashem. Aval, all his
what he has and what he hasn't got and who he's fighting, the parallels shout at you. I mean, you can't not see them.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't think you can even...
Well, what do you think? Who's David, who's Goliath?
I think that's just how they want to portray themselves to the media.
Oh, I don't care, but the fact is that...
Who is the real David, who's the real Goliath, and how do they portray it? Yes, Stella, yeah.
If you compare Israel to the rest of the world, then it looks like Israel is David and the rest of the world is Goliath.
Ah.
Also, if you see all the Middle East, all the Arab countries around, and you see on the map Israel, then Israel is...
I mean, yes, a lot of this war... A lot of this war is about perception. There's no question about it. It's a war of perception, a war of media and PR. And I guess Israel's position is, okay, maybe we're a little bit stronger than the Palestinians. We are stronger than the Palestinians. I don't think anyone would deny that. But it's not just the Palestinians who we have to fight with. We have ISIS in Sinai. We have Iran. We have Hezbollah. We have Syria. We have, you know, Turkey's no friend either, the Palestinians. So we have many different groups who are constantly trying, would like to destroy us and see us in the sea. And, Libya doesn't help either. And large parts of Egyptian population, we have a cold peace with them, but they're not friendly towards Israel, right? So if you look at the bigger perspective, the Middle East, we're David, they're Goliath. But, yeah.
Because David and Goliath wasn't only about size, it was about attitude.
Ah, yeah, fair. Good.
He provoked and he said, come get me. And David wasn't fighting a war of aggression, he was fighting a war of defense and survival.
Correct.
And it's not only about who was bigger, it's about who's provoking and who is trying to get the war fought. And that's where it looks different from only about size.
Nachon, correct. It is about attitude. And we have to remember David's emunah and have that sense of emunah and faith.
And fighting because we have to fight, not fighting correct. Because we like
Nachon. Nachon, correct. And I think what you're saying is absolutely correct. In that sense, we are the true David. But we're no longer the guy with the slingshot. We're not. And thank God we're not. Because if we were, we would be more...
Yeah. To attack at one time, we would be,
in terms of numbers,
we would be with the people with the slingshot. It doesn't matter all the sort of weaponry, but in terms of being outnumbered, in terms of the might of everyone else that hates us. I think, let's say they pick up a weapon that historically is the weapon of the underdog. It doesn't make them, righteous like this underdog was. They're just sort of, if you like, what's the word I'm looking for? When you take on the they've taken on the weaponry of, let's say, the righteous underdog. Doesn't make them the righteous underdog. Appropriating it.
Yeah. Well, that's part of what this is about. Trying to be perceived as David.
Shame on their leadership that send out people that are not trained to fight, and shame on their leadership they send out children into the battlefield. They've got plenty of
100%.
Money and whatever else behind them.
100%.
Equip themselves as a feasible state. They could spend more money on education.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So there's a
propaganda.
Yeah, there was a book by this guy Muravich, who wrote the subject to which Muravich devotes, and this is an article about it, devotes making, the book is called Making David into Goliath, is why and how the world turned against the Jewish state. As its beginning in 1948, Israel had broad global support in America. Both Republicans and Democrats, including the entire liberal left-wing community, supported it. Israel's story became familiar to Americans when a decade after country's birth, Leon Uris's novel Exodus became a worldwide sensation and bestseller that outsold even Gone with the Wind. Didn't know that. And was subsequently adapted into a movie starring Paul Newman. Okay. The question Muravich raises is, why did this positive feeling erode, both here and in Europe? After Israel's victory in the 1967 war, the narrative that was quickly adopted was not that of in 1948, in which beleaguered Israel valiantly fought for its survival as a state against a Goliath invading Arab powers. It was replaced by the opposite. Israel had been transformed into Goliath, using its superior power to defeat and destroy Palestinians who were fighting for their own people. Suddenly, the Arab powers had become David, standing against the Israeli behemoth. What had happened to this, to create this new paradigm? First, okay, he goes through, you know, the Arab cause and Yasser Arafat and there's a whole thing here. We've been, you know, labeled as colonialists, etc. But this is the world, including professors like Edward Said, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, have worked tirelessly over the last... Yeah, nachon, exactly. They've worked very hard to make us look like we are oppressors, colonialists, etc. And that using this biblical, you know, narrative of David and Goliath. But we need to return to the original meaning of what it means to be David. It's not necessarily weakness. It's stealthiness. It's being smart, but it's also having emunah and fighting out of defense. That has to be our... Which we do, nachon, I think we do.
Don't stop wars because we want to fight.
Nachon. Agreed. And that needs to be, you know, nachon, 100%. There's an interesting video. I didn't agree with it at all, but just worth looking at home. If you go on YouTube, there's a guy who came up with, what's his name? One second, let me just look this up quickly. If you go to YouTube, David and Goliath, there is there's an author who used Malcolm Gladwell. You guys heard of Malcolm Gladwell? He has a book, exactly, David and Goliath, where he talks about the unheard story of David and Goliath. I'm going to share you this. It's a TED Talk.